St. Red, My Aim is True by Jordan D. White. Episode 1, Welcome to the Working Week.
Red Cane awoke on the 18th of December in the year 2001 at around 11:06 a.m. He had a bit of coffee, put on a pair of underwear and a bathrobe, slipped on his horn-rimmed glasses, and went downstairs to check his mail. The porch of the apartment building was lightly glazed with snow, and Red's bare feet stung when he re-entered the building. Once back in his three-room apartment, he sat on his recliner, untied his bathrobe, and began to open the three items he'd received. The first was a Christmas card from Allison. Allison was just about the only friend he ever had. She was definitely the only person who cared enough about him to send him a Christmas card. He read the card. The front featured two cats wearing Santa hats shown through a window, with a wreath on the window encircling the cats. "Happy Holidays," it said. Inside was printed, "Wishing you the best of the holiday season." Allison had written her personal message on the opposite page.
"Hey there, Goggles,"
she'd written. She had always made fun of his thick glasses.
"Wanted to wish you a happy Christmas and New Year's. The cat on the left looks just like my chaser."
Red flipped back to the front of the card. The cat in question was gray with white around his feet and mouth. He flipped back.
"I hope you'll get a chance to come down and visit this year. I miss you. I can show you the ropes, just like in the old days. Love, Allison."
Red thought about going down to the city to visit her and smiled. Perhaps he'd call her soon. Maybe he'd wait till after Christmas, though. No point in getting in the way of people's celebrations just because he had no plans. The next letter was about a payment towards his student loans being due. He had graduated about 6 months before, and he still didn't have a real job. He'd ended up with an English literature degree, mostly because it was easy enough to get. No job offers had been knocking down his door, but he hadn't been knocking down any employers either. He had enough money from his inheritance to get by for some time, and he figured he'd eventually get around to working. He put the reminder back in the envelope and chucked it across the room towards the other things he was supposed to remember to do. The third envelope had no return address. The upper left corner simply read, D.I.&R. International. His name and address appeared to be handwritten in perfect script. He turned it over in his hands a few times before opening it.
"Mr. Kane,"
the letter read,
"after reviewing many possible candidates, D.I.&R. has decided to enlist you and your services into our rank and number both immediately and indefinitely. It should be approximately 11:18 a.m. when you read this. In 5 minutes, a car will come to your building to pick you up, at which time all remnants of your previous existence will be nullified. You may use this time to gather any personal effects that you would like to bring with you as you join our bold endeavor. We here at D.I.&R. would like to both offer our congratulations and our thank yous for your cooperation. We look forward to many years of working by your side. All of mankind is in your debt."
It was signed by Gerald Hayden, Department of Conscription and Enlistment, D.I.&R. International. This too, Red returned to its envelope and threw in the general direction of to-do. He then rose, leaving his robe behind, but bringing Allison's card, and went into the bathroom to take a dump. He missed Allison, too. They grew up together, went to the same schools up through high school. When she went off to New York for college, he had thought about going, too, but ended up staying relatively close to home. He'd never been down there, even though it was only 6 hours away. She used to come home for the holidays, but her family moved to Long Island, so it had been about 2 years since Red had seen her in the flesh. He looked at the card again. Chaser? Red had always wanted a cat, but had never gotten around to buying one. Another in a long list of things he hadn't bothered to do. "That's it," he thought to himself. "I am going to go down to the city to visit Allison. Maybe I can even be there for New Year's, go down to Times Square. I'm going to meet her cat, and then I'm finally going to get one of my own. Who knows, maybe I'll even like the city so much I'll move down there, get a place, find a job." This would have been a particularly motivated thought from someone who couldn't remember the last time he'd left a three-block area around his house, were it not that he'd decided something similar every week for the past 6 months. He wiped himself thoroughly, pulled up his Fruit of the Looms, and exited the bathroom, much to the shock of the young couple on the couch in his living room. Red, for his own part, was shocked as well, for not only was he not expecting a young couple, he was not expecting a couch. In fact, all the furniture looked unfamiliar. Gone was his recliner and home entertainment system, gone too was the ever-accumulating pile of mail. In its place was a tasteful living room set, made up of couch, love seat, a coffee table, two end tables, a bigger TV than his on a nicer stand, and a couple whose wide-eyed stare seemed to imply somehow that Red was the pervert in this situation. Red looked back into the bathroom. No other way out, he'd come the right way. He turned back to the intruders. The couple was clearly afraid of him. The woman hid her face in the man's arm.
"What do you want with us?"
the man asked. Red glanced toward his bedroom. He didn't recall having a fancy comforter either.
"Please,"
the woman said, crying.
"Please, just leave us alone."
He felt guilty. He thought it odd that he felt guilty, since it seemed these two had somehow broken into his apartment, moved out all his things, and replaced them in the last 5 minutes, effectively stealing his home. But he couldn't deny that seeing this woman cry at the sight of him made him want the sight of him to make a hasty retreat. He ran. Out his door and down the stairs he went, then out of the building and off the porch. The sight of the limousine registered in his mind, but did not slow him. When it honked its horn at him, however, he turned. The back door of the limo opened, and it honked again. He wondered at the wisdom of getting into a limo that was willing to pick up a man wearing only his underwear, but the snow was killing his feet, and he started to become self-conscious. He jumped in and closed the door behind him. The limo took off. The interior was quite posh, much more than Red would have expected, had he ever expected anything even remotely like this to happen. A young man with smartly coiffed and lightly frosted hair was the only other passenger. He wore a suit that was vaguely purple and looked remarkably expensive. He looked surprised, but not what one would call an I've-just-picked-up-a-man-in-his-undies surprised, more of a I-didn't-think-it-would-rain-today surprised.
I've never seen anyone bring so little before,
he said.
At any rate, congratulations, Mr. Kane. My name is Francis Argento. Is anything bothering you?
Red, for his own part, was kneeling on the back seat, watching his stolen apartment fade further and further into the distance. Yes, he said absentmindedly. He turned to face his companion. Who are you?
As I said, my name's Argento.
He took out his cell phone.
Give me a moment. Give me Robbie. Yes, Robbie. Mr. Kane and I will be arriving in half an hour or so. Meet us out front with my gym clothes. No, it's not for me. Yes? Yeah, thanks. See you in 30.
He slipped his phone back into its belt holster.
I'm not sure if they'll fit you, but we can't have you going around in your jockeys. I suppose it is a new beginning for you, but most people don't go quite so far in trying to leave it all behind them. But I see you brought something. What's that you have there?
Red looked down to find he still clutched Allison's Christmas card in his hand. Oh, he said. A Christmas card from Allison, a friend of mine.
Oh, your girlfriend?
No, just a friend.
Really? Oh, well then, there you are. At any rate, I've been instructed to show you this video.
He held up a VHS.
It should help introduce you to the world of DINR.
What's DINR? Argento was slipping the cassette into the limousine's TV VCR.
Hopefully this will answer all of your questions. If not, I shall do my best to tell you anything you ask. But if you would watch this first. Thank you.
At the press of a button, color bars filled the screen, accompanied by a flat tone to which Argento adjusted the volume. In a moment, the screen went black, and then an unobtrusive but pleasant bit of music faded in, as did a blue background. The song reminded Red a bit of an unidentifiable 70s TV theme song. A logo flew into the center screen, reading DINR and U. As that image faded, in came the perfect businessman walking through the perfect office.
Hello, and welcome to the exciting world of DINR, where man is made in God's image. Congratulations, for you have been chosen as the newest member of God's army here on Earth. I'm sure you must be feeling a lot of things right now. Confusion most of all, and perhaps even fear or anger. But don't worry, your life has just taken a turn for the better. And the kingdom of heaven is now assured to grant all of its splendor unto you from this day forth. Let's see if we can't clear up some of your confusion.
The office disappeared, and the man was now shown in front of blue screen, with images and graphics appearing behind him to illustrate his points, starting with the letters D, I, and R appearing down the left-hand side of the screen.
DINR stands for Divine Intervention in Retribution. We're a non-profit corporation founded many years ago by concerned, good-standing Christian citizens for the betterment of all mankind. For some time now, God has been hesitant to state his will directly to his children here on Earth. We at DINR have made it our mission to make sure God's will is done in his absence. From punishing the wicked to granting mercy to the pious, DINR does all that we know our loving God would do had our science-crazed, disbelieving, secular age not tied his holy hands. As a new member of our team, there are going to be many changes in your life. I'm sure your recruitment notice informed you about our previous life erasure plan. Because of the highly sensitive nature of our work here at DINR, it was decided that all evidence of our team's members' existence prior to recruitment be erased, to avoid inquiry into our members' whereabouts. The good news is that from this moment forward, DINR will make sure that your every need, and indeed, your every want, will be taken care of.
The shot changed to an aerial view of what Red assumed was the DINR buildings and grounds, then proceeded to show him a video tour of the facilities.
Everything you need can be found here at the DINR compound. Our housing facilities have every comfort a relaxing executive in God's corporation could wish for. When you arrive, you'll find that your quarters have been specially furnished by a team assigned to know exactly what you want, even before you do. We also have an on-site supermarket, 10 restaurants, 3 of which receive 5 stars from DINR Dining Review, a first-run movie theater, a gym, bowling alley, and there are many other fine entertainment choices available, just waiting for you to discover them. Only a minute or two away by underground monorail are DINR working facilities. There as well, you will find that your workstation, cubicle, or office has been customized to maximize the efficiency of your personal ergonomic workspace. Next door to the office building is our first-class medical and psychiatric help center. Another gym, available for your use during lunch hours. There's much more to be found in the DINR compound, far more than a video could tell you about, and a lot that I can't show you. Like the love and care each team member puts into their and God's work. As you become accustomed to your new life with us, we're confident that you will come to realize how lucky you are to be one of God's own chosen. So let me welcome you once again, give you my congratulations, but most of all, let me thank you. From our janitorial staff to our top-ranking officials, we know each and every one of you is important and needed. If there's anything we can do to make your assimilation into our team easier, please don't hesitate to ask. Here at DINR, our employees' wishes come second only to God's. Have a great day, and God bless you.
The music rose to a swell, and the DINR logo reappeared on the screen, along with text reading, Making Man in God's Image, and copyright 1995 DINR International. Argento smiled as he hit the stop and rewind buttons on the remote control.
Well, I trust that helped.
Red sat staring, barely noticing that his bare legs were sticking to the leather seats. His jaw hung somewhat open. After a moment of quiet contemplation, he said, What?
I'm sorry, Mr. Kane. Is there a problem?
I've been kidnapped by a bunch of psychotic Christian fundamentalists. I've been kidnapped by a bunch of psychotic Christian fundamentalists who want me to join their secret holy corporation. He tried the door handle, but it had been locked when he wasn't paying attention.
Calm down, Mr. Kane. It's nothing so sinister as that.
Argento moved himself to a seat closer to Red.
You're not being kidnapped. You've been chosen. You're the best man for the job we've selected you for. And it's not as though you had anything better to do, is it?
That's not the point. I have a choice, don't I? Maybe I was just about to turn my life around. Maybe later on today, I would have gotten a real job, or saved a life, or become rich.
You're going to do all of those things here. Listen, I've seen your file. I know what you've been doing. Nothing. What we're offering you is the chance to do good in the world, all the while having everything you could want supplied for you, not to mention serving the will of God. What could be wrong with that?
I don't even believe in God. And what's all this life erasure stuff? How did you get those people into my apartment so quickly? Where are my things?
This part is always the rough part. As it said in the letter you received, your prior life to this day has been erased. Your things are gone. Those people were there because it's their apartment. It always has been. No one you've met will ever remember you were born.
Okay, said Red, trying the door handles again. Okay, now I see. You're all just crazy.
I assure you, I'm not crazy. Neither are you, if that's your next theory.
One of us must be. How else could this be possible? How could you erase my life?
It's a miracle.
I'm serious.
So am I.
A miracle. You really believe this God stuff, don't you?
The world has become mired in science. God cannot fully assert himself if not enough people believe he exists. We are here to do as he would, were he fully able, and that includes miracles. We're not bad people. We're helping humanity.
Red stared Argento in the eyes, but he could not help being the first to look away. What do you want from me? He asked.
We're going to make you a saint. We're here.
The limo pulled to a stop in front of what Red recognized from the video as one of the work facilities. Make me a...
Oh my God, please, I've said too much.
The door opened and Argento climbed out. When Red joined him, a man he could only presume was Robbie handed him a gym suit.
Put that on. We're going to go meet Mr. Hayden. He can tell you more about your new life.
Red pulled the shirt over his head, and it seemed to fit all right, but the pants had an elastic waist, and apparently Argento was a bit thicker around the middle than Red was. He had to hold the pants up with his free hand in order to keep them on. Argento led him into the building, and Red soon found himself right inside of the perfect office he had seen in the video. As they snaked together deeper into the complex, cubicles gave way to hallways with real offices. Everything was colored very lightly, nothing dark, and the entire place was very well lit. Red was hard-pressed to find his own shadow. Eventually, they came to a door with a full-length glass window labeled Gerald Hayden, Vice President, Conscription and Enlistment. They entered, and Argento told Hayden's secretary to inform him of their arrival. She was blonde and wore a woman's suit that walked a fine line between respectable and sexy, threatening to go over either side depending on the way she moved. Her desk's nameplate read Georgie Martin. She had already gone back to whatever she'd been doing on her computer, but Red couldn't see her monitor from where he was sitting. She was also humming to herself, a tune Red couldn't pick out but reminded him of Burt Bacharach. The office itself was nice, although a few odd things drew Red's attention. The door to Hayden's inner office had not yet been finished, nor had the border around it. They looked like regular wood. Also, the walls on either side of the doorframe had been plastered in a line coming from the door at about chest height, and had yet to be repainted. It was as if someone had gouged out part of the wall. He also noticed a can of wood finish near the glass door. In a moment, Georgie's phone buzzed, and after she answered, she told Red and Argento they could go in. Hayden's office was very large, but had practically no furniture. There was his desk, quite a large one, the chair he sat in, and two in front of the desk. The only other things in the room were some boxes that were sitting behind him. They appeared to contain files, and perhaps some personal effects. Hayden himself was older than Red or Argento, looking more in his 40s or so. He was bald except for a fringe of hair that went around the back of his head from ear to ear, and he had very thin glasses with gold frames. He too wore an expensive-looking suit, but his looked far more expensive than Argento's, something Red might have not considered possible before. He had a very friendly smile, and he stood and offered his hand as soon as they entered. He must have noticed Red's perplexity at the decor, because the first thing he said was,
"Forgive the appearance of my office. I just got this desk in today, not quite settled into it, and the rest of the furniture won't be here till tomorrow. Welcome, Mr. Kane. I've been expecting you."
Argento indicated to Red that he should sit, which he did. Argento stood off to the side. "You've got the advantage on me," said Red. "I have no idea what's going on."
"Did you not show him the video?"
"I did, sir."
"Well then, at the very least you should know who we are and what we are trying to do, correct?"
"I suppose."
"Good. Then the most important thing is who you are and what you are going to do. It is very much my pleasure to meet you today, Mr. Kane. I have a very special destiny mapped out for you. You are to become a saint."
"So I've heard. Sounds kind of ridiculous to me. We don't have saints nowadays."
"You've heard?"
"I'm sorry, sir. He didn't seem to be taking me very seriously, and I was trying to impart to him that we were not..."
"That's all right, Francis. It's all right."
"What I don't understand, not including this whole idea of this ridiculousness, is why you want me to be a saint anyway. Who am I? I've never done anything special."
"Trust us. We know that you are the best man for this job. You will become a saint and do God's work. It is a very exciting project and one I am proud to be part of."
"What exactly does a saint do?"
"Many things. You would be primarily interventions rather than retributions, meaning you'd be sent more to help those deserving than to punish the wicked. You'd be sort of a holy secret agent. You'd be given missions through Argento. He is to be your liaison, and you'll go out to the world to do basically good."
"A holy secret agent? You do know how crazy this sounds."
"Perhaps to the uninitiated. Soon enough, you'll be part of it. You'll understand."
"Don't saints have to do miracles?"
"You will. We'll see to that. Miracles are not so hard to do as everyone thinks. It's just that they don't actually believe in them."
"And don't they have to die a martyr?"
"Ah, yes, well, you will. But there's no way of knowing when that will be. It could be decades from now. What matters is that you leave the earth, you'll have left it a better place, and you'll be granted a place of honor in the heavens."
Red sat and stared out a window. There was quite a lovely view from here, lots of trees. He turned back to Hayden, who was smiling at him expectantly. "You know what?" Red said at last. "There's no way. I'm not taking this job. No way. You are going to have to find yourself another saint." Hayden glanced nervously at Argento.
"Well, unfortunately, we can't. It's already been set in motion. I'm sorry if it's not what you'd planned on doing, but you're already going to be sainted. You're going to die a martyr no matter what. All that matters is that you do before that. Now, I think a man like you will do the right thing. You'll join with us, and together, we can make the world a better place."
"Okay. Let me take stock of this situation. I was kidnapped from my home, in my underwear, by a group of crazy fundamentalists who have wiped out my entire life, except for a Christmas card written by a girl who doesn't even remember me anymore. And now I sit in an oversized pair of sweats while they tell me I'm already doomed to a horrible death, so I should make the best of my time left."
"Well, I don't think I'd put it in such a derisive tone on it myself, but I suppose that's the short and long of it."
"Let me ask you this. Do I have a choice?"
"No one has ever turned us down before you. But I suppose the real answer is no. The rest of the world doesn't know you exist anymore. We're all you've got. But it's not so bad, really. We really are a wonderful organization, and you can have basically anything you've ever wanted through us. We have everything you could ask for here on our compound. And when you're away on your missions, your expenses will be covered. You're going to come to enjoy it. I know you will."
End of episode